Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So another shot to the Trump era deregulation, let corporate America do whatever the hell they want. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals today, I guess it was yesterday, the Ninth Circuit shot down another Trump administration decision. They wanted to propose, and this has been going on for a while. In fact, I remember 2013 when we were doing our labor history tour. I remember my Teamster buddy in, I think it was Arkansas, who was saying, hey, this is coming. They want to put one guy in charge of driving the train. And you go, well, you know, it's just, you're just sitting there, you know, watching the tracks go by. No, what happens if someone has a heart attack? What happens if someone gets sick? What happens if? This is just more greed, more hooray for them and less for working people. And here to share some thoughts on this decision and why this is important. I have asked Greg Hines to come talk with us. Greg is the National Legislative Director for Smart TD. They're the International Association of Sheet Metal, Air, Rail, and Transport Workers. Greg, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, glad to be here.
So walk me through this decision. The court ruled, I guess it was yesterday now that I look at it, that they ruled that the Trump administration wanted to go to one person driving the train. This is going to open the door to leaving it at two. Am I getting that right?
Well, actually, they'd like to go to no people on the train is what they would like to do. And they're doing it step by step, trying to do it with one person. But the decision that was rendered by the court was, in my view, the correct decision. And what FRA, the Federal Railroad Administration, tried to do was they tried to use something called a negative preemption. They tried to say that by them not issuing a rule on crew staffing, that would preempt all states from doing it either. So they were basically saying, we're not going to do anything about regulating how many crew members are on a train, and we're not going to allow any states to do it either. And so the court upheld our argument, and states' rights prevailed, and rail safety prevailed.
So now this is on. So let me figure out how this works now. So individual states can say yes, we're okay with one or no one in the train, and others can say no, we want two. Can anyone say three?
Well, actually, Washington's crew bill allows for three people in certain instances. The state's bills are pretty much the same, requiring a minimum of two person on all of them. There are some variant differences from state to state, but we have several states that have passed the law. And so a lot of those states were waiting on this decision to know whether they could implement the law and enforce it. And so this means that all of the states that passed two-person crew, they're now in effect.
Now, you know, like I said at the beginning, I remember in 2013, we did a cross-country labor history tour, and we ended up, I think, in Little Rock, if I'm not mistaken. And the guy we met there at the Teamsters Hall was saying, hey, make sure this is on your radar, because this is what the railroad companies are trying to do. They want to go down to one person. He said this is, and he went through a whole slew of why it would be a bad idea to have just one person in the train. Can you tell us what you think those bad ideas would be to have one person handling the duties?
Well, you touched on some of it, you know, the safety of the crew member being up there by themselves, because trains run through the most rural parts of America. You're in the middle of nowhere. I worked as a train conductor. And so if something were to happen to you, you're by yourself in the middle of nowhere, you're just on your own. But how it really impacts the general public on a daily basis is with crossing accidents. We have thousands of crossing accidents every year. We have 400 to 500 fatalities in crossing accidents every year. So when you think about the public safety aspect of it, if a train hits a vehicle in a crossing, it takes that train a long time to stop. You know, some trains could take a mile to stop. So by the time they're stopped, they're blocking the crossing. If you have one person on that train, you don't have anybody to go back to see what happened, see how bad the damages are. When I've worked in these situations where we hit a car on a crossing, the first thing the conductor does is get off the train to go back to assess the damage, relay that to the engineer who's on the radio with emergency services to dispatch what they need, how serious it is, whether it's serious or not. And if there was only one person on that train when you hit a car in the crossing, that engineer can't abandon his train. He would have to secure it before he could get off of it, which would take at least 45 minutes. So what he'd have to do is call the railroad, and they'd have to send somebody out there. And anybody who's been involved in any kind of traffic accident, you know that seconds count. So if you have to wait an hour for somebody even to come out there to assess what's going on there, you have a real problem. Not to mention that when that train stopped on those crossings, no cars can cross that crossing because the train's blocking it.
Right.
What happens in these situations, the conductor, if he needs to make a separation in the train to allow emergency vehicles through, he can make a separation right then, allow the emergency vehicles through, and they can do what they need to do. If there's one person, that's not going to happen unless the railroads send somebody out to that location. So it's just ridiculously unsafe and greedy.
And I got to be honest, it doesn't sound like you're taking one additional person off. In the big picture, I mean, we're talking about multi-billion-dollar industry here, that it would save them that much money. I mean, it's like, you know, looking for, you know, change in the couch cushions. It seems like that to me. This seems punitive more than anything.
Well, it's more about that the railroads are dictated by Wall Street now. It's all about the operating ratio to create the highest profit margin as possible. And the way they're doing that, it used to be, let's think of it like a tree with a lot of fruit on it. And the railroads used to, and all those fruit are customers and rail shippers. And the railroads used to harvest the entire tree. And there was profit in all of the fruit. Some fruit was higher profit margin than others. So what the railroads have done now is decided, well, we're only going to pick the fruit that has a really high profit margin, and we're just going to let the rest of it go so that their operating ratio is increased so they can show making more money by doing less. So it's basically doing less with less. And the shippers have a big problem with the greed that's happening because of Wall Street as well as us.
Yeah.
And safety has been thrown to the wayside.
No,
they want to get rid of all the people doing inspections. They want to get rid of all the people doing track maintenance. They want to get rid of the people that do air tests and brake tests on the trains. It's really getting to a dangerous point. And if Trump had another 4 years, I'm afraid for the situation that America would be in the next coming years.
No, I'm with you. And, you know, as I'm looking at what happened in Texas, again, when you take regulations away, you let corporate America follow their natural path to lining their pockets at the expense of the rest of us, there's nothing but bad down the road. And that was one of the questions I was going to ask you, because I remember when I was a kid, you know, this is going back late 70s, early 80s, we used to spend a lot of time hopping the trains. We'd take it from Cleveland out to Bellevue, Ohio. We'd do all kinds of things on the trains. But there were a bunch of people that worked on those. I remember there were two guys sitting in the caboose. I don't even know if they have cabooses anymore. So we're down to two now? Because I remember there used to be several. What happened to whittling that down?
Well, it's all been because of technology, and it's all about technology. And the railroads don't look at technology as a way to make the railroads safer. They look at technology as a way to eliminate crew members. I'm a fifth generation railroader. So my family has been working for the railroad over 100 years, and I've seen these changes come. And for instance, you mentioned the caboose. The caboose was, they got rid of the caboose when they invented something called an end of train device. So they wanted to take those crew members off the rear of the train. They have an electronic device that can be administered from the engine that would put the train in emergency from the rear. One of the reasons you had crew members on the rear is if there was a problem with putting the train into emergency and they couldn't do it from the head end, you could do it from the rear end because you had people back there that could put the train in emergency. So they created this end of train device that replaced the caboose. That was in 1985. Those end of train devices fail every single day on the railroad. We had two fatalities last year because of a failure of an end of train device. So end of train devices didn't make the railroad safer. They just made it with less people, which has been the goal all along. They've gone from five people on a crew down to two, and they want to go to zero. And they're crying that they have to do this or they won't be profitable at a time when they're making more profit than they have ever made in the history of the world.
You know, it just goes back to that question, you know, how much is enough? And I remember the CEO of Caterpillar saying, it's never enough. I want more. I always want more. And this is another example of that. It's never enough. And what sadly ends up happening, as we've been discussing, we're the ones who end up bearing the cost of the external costs of more accidents, of more fatalities, of all of the things that come because of this. So the question that I come back to is, yeah, this is good. It's a good start. I'm glad the Ninth Circuit made the right decision. About time. How do we make sure that this doesn't continue to be an issue? Because I remember hearing about it back in 2013. This has not gone away, and I fear that it's not going to go away, you know, now. How do we make sure it goes away? We make sure that our trains are safe, our transportation networks are safe, and the transportation workers are safe.
Well, elections matter. And because of Joe Biden getting elected, we can put the brakes on a lot of this horrible stuff. The deregulation attitude that everyone's had, there's been such a narrative that regulation bad. We need businesses to make tons of money. They don't need oversight. I mean, look what happened in the airline industry with the FAA and Boeing. I mean, that's what happens when you let these industries self-regulate. You have problems like the 737 MAX. It's the same in the railroad. Now, if you let the railroad self-regulate, you're going to have people dying. We have a code of federal regulations for railroads that oversees regulatory issues with railroads. It's over 1,000 pages. And those regulations were written in blood. Every one of those regulations came about because people died because of bad behavior by the railroads. If you trust the railroads to do the right thing, they won't. We have 150-year history proving that.
Now, that's an excellent
point.
And
so now with the Biden administration and having adults in the room again, we're working very hard at rolling back a lot of the waivers that were granted. The Federal Railroad Administration under Ron Bottori, a former CEO for a railroad, they were rolling back and granting waivers to all the railroads whenever they asked. Oh yeah, you don't have to do that anymore. You don't have to do that anymore. All about saving the railroads money and with no interest to safety. And now we have people back in the FRA, thanks to Joe Biden's victory, who care about safety again.
No, that's an incredible thing. But I want to go back to something you said a second ago, that every one of those pages of regulations were printed with people's blood. You know, because we hear an awful lot from the Republicans about, you know, job-killing regulations. I hear it all the time. Job-killing regulations. Got to get rid of those job-killing regulations. But we don't hear an awful lot about when someone gets killed and it's because they've taken away those protections. And I'm glad you brought that up because I think people need to understand that there's a reason these regulations were put into place in the first place. And that's because something bad happened.
Oh, yeah. And the unions, you know, the rail unions were formed because of the bad behavior, because of safety. We were into safety long before we were into collective bargaining of taking care of our people, because the railroads wouldn't. It used to be if you got injured, you were fired right before that injury happened. And it's all about having no liability and no accountability to their employees. It's really sad. And the term being railroaded has been around for a long time. It's a derogatory term. And it was well earned by the railroads. Nobody says you got railroaded if something good happens.
That's a good point.
And that's across the board.
You know, but I'm glad you brought that up as well, because one of the things that what's happened to our society is we stopped talking about that history. We stopped talking about how bad things were and how it was unions fighting for better wages, hours, and conditions, how it was fighting for good regulation and government, how it was fighting the good fight against corporate America to make them do the right thing that provided the things that we take for granted today.
You're exactly right. And I think that we're going to get back on that track and working towards that going forward. I mean, we had the Rail Safety Advisory Committee, which for the last 25 years has been the carriers and labor and the regulatory agencies working together to craft valuable regulation. If the railroad was going to talk about crew staffing, get all the players in the room, work it out, and come up with a solution. That stopped happening as soon as Trump was elected. They completely disbanded it. They let the charter run out, and then they wanted to reinstate it at a much watered down version. So this deregulation that Trump was on was very harmful to the safety of American railroads.
No, we got a lot of work to do. I hope people will check out your website, fightfortwopersoncruise.com. That's fightfortwopersoncruise.com. We'll get links out on social media how folks can take a look at that. But I wanted to ask you, back in 2020, there was a piece of legislation introduced in the Senate, the Safe Freight Act, Senate Bill 1979. Is that going to be reintroduced here in this session?
Well, actually, the two-person crew bill, which we've been running since Lac-Mégantic happened, that got passed out of the House in H.R. 2, the infrastructure bill that was passed and sent over to the Senate. Of course, Mitch McConnell has done absolutely nothing with it. And we're very hopeful and optimistic that language will remain in the base bill for the infrastructure package. There was a rail safety title in HR 2 that covered a lot of the things that we've been working on for a number of years. So that's already passed the House. And now that we have a Democrats in charge of the Senate, we feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, because we do need massive infrastructure investment. And interestingly enough, rail gets the best grades from the American Society of Civil Engineers. They get a B grade. So good on you guys for fighting to make sure that infrastructure is well kept. But we can always do much better by making sure that we don't have the kind of tragedies that you were talking about because we don't have cabooses anymore.
Right. And it's not just the freight rail. I mean, in passenger rail, this is a little bit off a topic, but it's still relevant. When we had the insurgency in Washington, D.C. on January 6th, a lot of those insurgents or domestic terrorists, whatever you want to call it, they traveled to D.C. on passenger rail, on Amtrak and on the MARC, and they were unruly. They wouldn't wear masks. They were belligerent to the other passengers and the crew members. They refused to get off the train when told to. There wasn't enough security to deal with them. And one of them was got off the train, was searched, and had a machete in his backpack. So I'm very confident that there were a lot of weapons on Amtrak. Jeez. And TSA has jurisdiction over Amtrak. And we want to see TSA have a presence at Amtrak. And that way they would have access to the don't fly list. And anybody who's on a don't fly list shouldn't be riding a train either. So we've got a lot of work to do on freight and passenger, and it's going to be very busy the next few years.
And I hope you'll come back and share with us all of those things. Greg, I appreciate you taking some time sharing these thoughts with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Greg Hines, National Legislative Director for the Smart Union, the good folks at the International Association of Sheet Metal, Air, Rail, and Transit Workers. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.